podcast studio inside the Charleston Digital Corridor's flagship incubator on Morrison Drive with another episode of the CDC Tech Life podcast. One of the more fascinating aspects of the technology industry is how digital technologies can be applied to non-digital technology and industries to produce really transformative change. In today's episode, we're fortunate to talk with the CEO of a Charleston-based ag tech startup that is already making an enormous impact on one of society's most significant challenges. This episode is brought to you by the Charleston County Economic Development Department. They're dedicated to recruiting new business, growing existing industry, and improving Charleston's business climate. Visit them to learn more at charlestoncountydevelopment.org. Our guest on this episode of the Charleston Digital Corridor Tech Life podcast is Don Taylor. Don is the CEO of Amplified Ag. Well, welcome to the show, Don.
Hi, Rich. Nice to be here.
Don, can we start by getting an overview of Amplified Ag, what your mission is, some solutions and services you offer, types of customers you serve, and maybe some other key members of the team?
Sure. Our high-level mission is to localize and modernize agriculture for farmers and communities and really across the globe. So we're building indoor vertical farming technology that we're selling to folks who are looking to build farms, operate farms. We're also selling to large-scale operations. The USDA has bought several technologies from us. So we basically build a software platform, an electronics and control platform to manage the farms. Then we also have the farm technology itself that we're building and deploying to third parties.
Now, in doing some research for the show, I read a little bit about CEA. Can you, introduce folks to the concept and maybe talk a little bit about the history and how you became so passionate about this particular technology and industry?
Yeah, so CEA stands for Controlled Environmental Ag, which is what we do. So we build control systems that control the farm operations inside of shipping containers is what we're building them in. And what drew me to this initially is I was the chief technology officer at Benefit Focus for a bunch of years, and we built a large engineering team in India. I spent a lot of time traveling back and forth to India in the 2015 timeframe, probably a few years prior to that. I became very familiar with the crisis that they were having from an agriculture perspective. No more arable land, billion people. They just could not grow the food that they needed to grow. So that really got me thinking about agriculture. As I was retiring from Benefit Focus, I went and started doing a lot of research on it, began to find that the globe has a big agriculture problem. It wasn't just India. And I went down a path of research and ultimately decided to put together a company, Amplified Ag, that would basically build the technology with the vision of deploying it around the world to places where people were really needing food. I chose shipping containers because they are deployable. What we use are refurbished reefer units. So they're decommissioned, they're sitting in junkyards. So from a sustainability perspective, it's a good move. But then they're also made to go on ships. So the thinking was that we could build them and then deploy them to regions of the world that wouldn't have any other opportunity for producing food. So that really got me going down the path. Yeah. Initially, it was really as a science experiment. So in 2016, I'm a software engineer by trade, so it looked like a fun thing to do. We took some Raspberry Pis and started building control systems. I'd also started, kind of as a digression, I'd started Boxcar Central in 2001, which was basically a warehouse management software company. We took that foundation of logistics and built the farm control systems on top of that. As we got further into the process, realized that farming is also a very complicated logistics problem. So through that process, we ended up with a software platform that manages all of the farm operations, manages all the control systems so the farmers can go on their phone and check the temperature and humidity and CO2 and all those types of elements inside of a farm.
It's interesting how your firsthand experience with a pretty large scale societal need came into contact with the science project and at the same time some tech you'd built as part of another venture and all sort of came together to form Amplified Ag.
Yeah, and then it really took on a life of its own. We started Vertical Roots, which is a commercial brand, and we really did that 2 years into the technology build because we realized we didn't know how to operate a farm. We felt like we needed to be operating at scale to really prove out the technology. So Vertical Roots really took on a life of its own. The team did a fantastic job of building that brand. We ended up in 2,000 or so retail outlets. And now we're at a point where we're pivoting kind of away from the farming operations and really getting centralized focus on the technology, sales, and deployment.
That's kind of interesting. You really made it so that you were your first customer and a good case study to then sort of not only prove you could do it, but prove to other, you know, potential customers you could do it.
Yeah, and it also gave us a lot more credibility from a technology sales perspective. Mm-hmm. We're able to talk to potential customers now about the retail space and how mm-hmm. you deal with wholesalers yeah. and the entire logistics flow inside of produce is something that took a number of years to learn.
That's great. Well, what are some key milestones and achievements you guys have hit that you maybe want to highlight?
Well, I think the first was really having a successful brand from mm-hmm. a produce perspective, which, you know, one of the big challenges with CEA is you are growing plants and you're growing them with lights mm-hmm. in a very controlled environment, which is not natural. So, you know, when I first started this, I thought, well, how hard could it be? You've got some lights, you've got some water, you've got some nutrients and some seeds. Well, what we found is that growing a consistent 4.5 ounce plant every single time, you know, we were shipping probably 2 million pounds of lettuce a year at our peak. That's actually a very hard thing to do. So we achieved that, and we have now reached a point where we're consistently growing a 5 ounce plant, which is significant mm-hmm. when you're talking about the unit economics of a farm. So that's probably one of our major milestones. And then being able to start deploying technology to third parties. So when the USDA chose our technology as a sole source provider for mm-hmm. CEA technology, they put it at their facility here in Ravenel and Charleston mm-hmm. and are doing research growing other types of products. So they're growing rice, broccoli, looking at high protein types of products. So when you go back to the original vision of the company of deploying to places mm-hmm. where people need food, lettuce is probably not what you want right. what you want to deploy. So I'm very excited about the partnership that we have with them.
What are some of the challenges you're facing as a business and maybe some opportunities you're looking at to sort of get you to that next level of scale?
Yeah, one of the biggest challenges with CEA and vertical farming in particular is if you're vertical farming, you have to use lights because yeah. you know their greenhouses are able to disperse the plants across a much wider range. Well, the advantage of vertical farming is you consume a lot less land mm-hmm. in the process yeah. of farming, but you have to run lights, LED lights, and lights produce heat. And they consume electricity, and then you have to consume more electricity to deal with the heat that the lights are generating. From a unit economics perspective, that's one of the biggest challenges of vertical mm-hmm. farms. And what we've been working on over the last several years is designing a new set of lights. So LED technology has advanced significantly over the last, well, every year it's exponentially improving. So we're now building our own lights with very specialized spectrums to try much closer mimic the sun, and we're seeing less power consumption and larger plants. So we're using less power to grow more food and also experimenting with solar. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, my view is over the next 5 to 10 to 15 years, as solar really takes hold and the efficiencies get to where they need to get to, mm-hmm. that will really launch CEA farms in a big way.
Seems like a really fascinating space in that, you know, you've got your core technologies around the software and around some of the electronic monitoring and measuring of what's going on. But, you know, now you're talking about other technologies like lighting technology and whatnot that you're also driving some innovation in.
Yeah, we've also built our own dosing system. So mm-hmm. everything that goes on inside of the farm is fully automated from a support perspective for the farmer. So mm-hmm. once the seed gets planted, the system pretty much takes control of that process through software automation.
Well, what does success look like 3 to 5 years down the road for Amplified Ag?
Success, in my view, is to continue the deployment of the technology. Mm-hmm. And really, from my personal perspective, is I want to see this end up in places where people need food. You know, mm-hmm. I tell the team all the time, you have to generate a profit in order to be altruistic. So we, mm-hmm. you know, we need to continue selling the technology. We've continued to align this with the crossing the chasm paradigm. It lines up with it so perfectly because it's a very new emerging technology. Many of the traditional farms and the supply chain in general is all 200 years old, and changing that model to where you can put farms right at the back door of a facility and generate the capacity that they need is a very logical thing to happen, but you're trying to now sell to pragmatists who are wanting to understand the unit economics and all those pieces of it. So for me, over the next 3 to 5 years is proving the unit economics, really proving to the pragmatic market that this is a technology that makes a lot of sense, not to replace traditional farming, but to augment it where it's needed. And it's also a sustainable farming model. You know, we're not dumping lots of nutrients into the ocean. We're not using pesticides. All of those types of things I think are very important. As we proliferate the technology in that fashion, then being able to push this out to places where people need food is ultimately the win for me.
Yeah, a second ago we talked about how you're touching so many different technologies in one direction, but it's interesting in the other direction, you're starting to touch more and more of the entire supply chain around the industry as well.
Yes. Yeah. We've learned a lot. You know, it's interesting if you look at just lettuce as an example, 95% of the lettuce in the United States is grown in California and Arizona. Mm-hmm. What that means is it gets harvested, it gets put on a truck, the truck drives 2,000 miles, then it goes to a processing center, it has to go through processing. So the product's going to be a couple of weeks old by the time it actually gets to the shelf. And when you look at the miles and the emissions and everything that happens through that process, I think there's a tremendous amount of logic in making this replacement, but the entire supply chain model is built that way. So that's part of what we're pushing our way through is helping change that paradigm.
Also, you talked about the ultimate mission is to bring food to more people. Is that something you think actively about how you measure your impact that you're making there and how you maybe talk about it externally, even sort of outside of a sales and marketing context?
Yeah, we do. You know, we over the last several years, we do donate a lot into the local food hubs and food banks. Being able to get to a point where the technology can be deployed very rapidly into a region that needs the technology, to me is still probably a few years away. You know, this is one of these that I'm going to keep saying it and keep saying it until it actually happens sort of thing. And I'm confident that it will. But I think in the short term, just being able to produce food and produce sustainable environments for farmers to make a profit is the short term goal.
Yeah. I mean, solving that deployment challenges to places in need, you know, the rapid deployment is a problem I could see extending to sort of other industries, other types of social need where, you know, it's very difficult. The world is becoming increasingly chaotic and things happen at a faster and faster pace. And so that ability as a global society to respond really quickly is something we're going to be tested with.
And the environment, there's so much rhetoric on global warming, and regardless of what side of the fence you fall on that, the reality is that many of the regions of the world are suffering fairly significant environmental events that are impacting their farms.
Yeah.
And whether it's too much rain or not enough rain, either one of those scenarios crushes a farm.
Yeah. And it doesn't really matter why that's happening. What's important is being able to respond to
exactly.
it. Exactly. Yeah. That's great. Well, you mentioned your role previously as CTO of Benefit Focus. Maybe talk a little bit about some of the experiences you had in that role that you think maybe uniquely prepared you for transitioning into a CEO role.
You know, I had a very unique opportunity to, when I joined Benefit Focus, I was actually running Boxcar Central at the time. So in 2001 or so, about the same time Benefit Focus was formed, I started Boxcar Central and spent about 5 years focused on that technology. I'd actually worked with several of the folks that had gone up to Benefit Focus, and I got to know Sean and really saw a huge potential with that company. And the dynamics that were happening in the industry at the time, it was just a fantastic opportunity for me to come in on a fairly early stage and be part of building an extremely large scale platform that ultimately we had 25 plus million people on the platform. So out of that, you know, the things that I learned were dealing with enterprise customers. Half of my job was going and talking to CTOs and CEOs of our large scale customers, enterprise insurance companies. So that skill in of itself just helps you in your career. Being able to deal internationally, building a workforce in India was also, from a scale perspective and understanding the unit economics of running a business, you have to really understand that before you make that sort of a leap. And then just the complexities of dealing with large-scale teams. At the peak, you know, we probably had 700 people in the engineering department. And you learn a lot about dealing with complicated relationships and keeping everybody pointed in the right direction and focus. So I think that those pieces combined with my years of owning, running Boxcar Central really prepared me for where I'm at today.
And along that same timeline, of course, we had a lot of growth here in Charleston in the technology industry more broadly.
Yes.
You were along for most of the ride. You know, what are some of your experiences and perspectives on the growth that we've experienced in the last 15 years or so?
Yeah, and I'll even go back further than that. I moved to Charleston in 1991.
Okay.
And I grew up in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. My dad was an engineer. All of our neighbors were engineers. I thought that that's just what societies looked like. And when I got to Charleston in 1991, I realized that was not at all the case. I actually came here as a programmer to work for First Federal at Charleston at the mm-hmm. time. As I got further and further into that technology piece in the local community, I realized what a massive void there was from an infrastructure and support perspective for talented engineers. So if you fast forward a little bit and go to 2001, when I started Boxcar Central, Ernest was actually just in the process of spinning up the digital mm-hmm. corridor at that time. So I've known Ernest since the beginning of all of this. And it's extremely exciting to me to see the transition that's happened over the past 30 years, really, with technology in this region. There's so many successful software companies. There's so many engineers in this region. There's engineers working here that are working remotely. You know, mm-hmm. we were talking a little bit earlier about remote workforces. This is a fantastic place to live. Through the years, my entire career in Charleston, it's always been a challenge recruiting engineers, always. And our region, the Low Country, is a very good attraction for talented folks to join us. And I think that it's happened. And I think Ernest and his efforts have gone a long way towards really helping that and promoting that.
Yeah, we've talked on previous episodes with guests about how things have changed now. And you have engineers, programming, technical talent coming to the area, not necessarily having to be recruited by a local company, but coming to the area just to live and work because they can remotely. And that really changes the landscape. And it makes it easier for that to happen. I mean, obviously, quality of life here is fantastic. But, you know, I think for people like that, knowing that there's a community, knowing that there's presence of these companies here and that they'll have like-minded people around them now, whereas in 1991, I'm sure it was very different for you. Right. I think that plays a big part in it.
Yeah, and ultimately, career-minded people want to know that they have a trajectory and a path if they want to change and go in a different direction. And if you don't have any opportunities in a region, then that's not very attractive. So growing and building more companies, even out of Benefit Focus, the number of companies mm-hmm. that have been spun out by people who left Benefit Focus is really staggering. And it's an awesome thing to see happen.
Yeah. And those things happen in waves. They go out, some of them turn into larger and larger ventures, and that spawns sort of the next wave. And it's fun watching or thinking about how that's played out over the, like you said, the past three decades or so. So you got me beat by about 10 years in terms of coming to the area. Well, what are some of your favorite local technology entrepreneurship events, activities, your programs in the local area that folks might be interested in?
Well, I have to give Jessica a shout out for the Women in Tech. You know, that's another one that started really back when we were Benefit Focus in the very early days. And I remember the first meetings I would attend, and there would be 12 people there, and most of them were from Benefit Focus. And
now it's hundreds.
Now it's hundreds. And, you know, I give Jessica a lot of credit for that. And it's really fantastic. I'm on one of the engineering boards at the College of Charleston. Mm-hmm. And I was recently at an event where there were several women who were getting engineering degrees. And it was really exciting to see that. And of course, I pushed them in that direction. You know, the digital corridor is another one. I think creating an environment where people can come, you know, when you're starting a startup company, cash is always the biggest issue. Yeah. And without cash, you can't have a place to work. And remote work is important, but you also need to be able to come together as a team. And I think that the facility that's been built here is a huge advantage for folks in this region who are looking to start companies.
Yeah, those are both great examples. The Women in Tech thing in particular, just all the challenges we talked about bringing technical talent here to begin with is probably amplified when you're talking about gender or other types of diversity, folks knowing that not only is there a community of technically minded folks, but there are people like them. And I think the Charleston Women in Tech have done a lot for that. I really enjoyed talking with Jessica a few months ago about that. I mean, in general, but about that in particular. And finding out we had common mutual acquaintance in Mary Beth Westmoreland, my former manager and a close friend of Jessica's. And they're both involved there. So it's funny how all the dots connect when you step back far enough.
Exactly.
Well, where can listeners go to learn more about Amplified Ag and keep up with your progress?
Our website, amplifiedag.com, also LinkedIn, Instagram, you know, all the typical things, but keep an eye on us. Yeah.
Yeah, the website's great. Yeah, there's other podcasts out there that you guys have linked, case studies. Yeah. There are a lot of good material to sort of get up to speed, not only with what you're doing, but can send you down some rabbit holes when it comes to CEA if you really want, you know, get interested in the topic. So that's fantastic. Yes. Well, thanks for joining us, Don Taylor, CEO of Amplified Ag.
Thank you, Rich.
I really enjoyed talking with Don and learning about the amazing work going on at Amplified Ag. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with the Vertical Roots brand, and it's incredible how much more is going on behind the scenes and how broad of an impact that this work can have. When we return with the next episode in August, we'll be bringing back an old friend of the show, serial entrepreneur Matt Goff, to talk about what's going on with his current venture and what he has on tap next. I want to thank our sponsor for this episode, the Charleston County Economic Development Department. They're dedicated to recruiting new business, growing existing industry, and improving Charleston's business climate. Visit them to learn more at charlestoncountydevelopment.org. As always, I want to thank Ernest and the team at the Charleston Digital Corridor for making this show possible. Look for the CDC Tech Live podcast wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And while you're there, leave us a rating or review and subscribe so you don't miss any of the upcoming episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And of course, follow the Charleston Digital Corridor to stay up to date on all of the happenings here in Charleston. Thanks for listening. I'm Rich Conti, and this has been the CDC Tech Life Podcast.